Vishada Yogam. The term Vishada means despondency or insurmountable shoka, grief. Shoka means grief. Yoga is a sadhana or the means. So here, of course, the yoga here denotes a chapter. Shoga, Vishada Yogam means shoga is used as a sadhana, as a yoga. Can shoga or grief lead to yoga? Certainly. Surely. See, only when you are in distress, you seek help. Only in sorrow, we think of God. Some may even ask you if they know that you are going to the spiritual classes or Bhagavad Gita lectures such as this. They'll ask you, what is wrong with you? You started going to these spiritual places, etc. It's only because generally grief is taken to trigger the need for prayers and spiritual pursuits. But it doesn't need to be like that. Life is for enjoyment, given. But living is the perpetual preparation for perfection. So what's the point of thinking about digging a well when the house is already on the fire? Dreadful, isn't it? So let us not wait for the grief to drive us to God or the spiritual lessons. When we are without worries and we are at ease, we should seek knowledge and be prepared. What causes grief? The culprit is attachment. It is known in Sanskrit as raga. Raga. Only when there is attachment on an object, other character modifications occur within us that create various emotions towards the object of desire. There are three key emotions: kama, krodha, lobha. Kama refers to the excessive lust or greed that is based on adharma or violating dharma. It manifests as excessive passion on things. When such passion cannot be fulfilled, raga expresses itself in terms of krodha or anger. Even when it is fulfilled, it creates a sense of insecurity and a possessiveness for not to part or share. Such miserly attitude is called lobha. The whole Mahabharata war is a result of such character modifications in Kauravas. Kama, krodha, lobha. What is the result or impact of raga? It creates fear, bhaya. The bhayam affects our external organs or the bhashyakarnas. That was why Arjuna had to suffer from trembling hands, shivering legs, tearful eyes, breathing difficulties, goosebumps. He barely could stand and became physically unstable out of fear. He dropped his instrument of war. The fear also affects our internal organs, antakarnas. For time being, for a simple understanding, take antakarna to mean two parts: the manas or the mind, which deals with thoughts based on feeling and emotions. Manas based on feelings and emotion. And the buddhi that deals with thoughts based on discriminating intellect. So Arjuna's fear was not due to cowardice, but due to raga or attachment. Such bhaya can completely weaken your body and mind and intellect. The bhaya, the fear in the antakarna results in shokam on the mind, grief, despair, and sorrow, and moham in the buddhi, delusion, confusion, and the inability to choose the right from the wrong. Do you understand? Buddhi, when afflicted by moham, is deluded. It cannot control. It is enslaved by the grieving mind. But if the mind is in shoga, in grief, it cannot discriminate right from the wrong. And as a result, buddhi falters in its function. So what does the despondency of Arjun imply? Arjun is completely affected by raga and its effects, baya, shokam and mokam. His mind is full of shokam, his buddhi is full of mokam. He lost the ability to think, as he confides in the sloka. That's why he was even seeking external confirmation in the forms of omens. In the 30th sloka, he says he is seeing vipariya saguna. He is seeing bad omens. It's confirmation bias. He even argues why giving up the fight is the right thing to do. He suddenly becomes very philosophical. You know, we too do sometime, isn't it? When we fail in something, an exam or business, you would say, we'll philosophize. Oh, such failures are not important. Life is, after all, transient. Nothing is permanent, etc., etc. Such temporal renunciation is known in Sanskrit as jihasa vairagyam, false vairagyam. That's what Arjun thinks. What is the benefit of this war? He asks. He points out that one must have control of senses and should not yield to this fighting interest. It's really funny because as he's saying this in the Sloka 32, he addresses Krishna as Rishikesha. Rishikesha means one who controls the senses. Perhaps he is trying to imply that Krishna should be sensible not to fight the war. He also begins to talk in plural terms, no more I. The same Arjuna who said before, take my chariot to the middle, now started saying, we should not fight, we should not sin, we should perhaps give up to get Krishna's sympathy. Was it a just war? Was he right to refuse the fight? Some argue that war is never right. How could Krishna, the Lord, preach war? This we must understand very clearly. Remember, in Dharma, war is a last resort, but it is one of those ways. In any conflict, be it war or other challenges, the Shastras say there are four progressive strategies to be pursued. You know that? Sama, Dana, Beda, Danda. Sama means to make peace. The first effort is to avoid any fight and to try to make peace through reasoning and by all possible means. If that is not successful, then we should try dana, which means compromising or giving up the possession or expectation just for the sake of peace. If these two strategies do not work, then there is a moral obligation to weaken the unrighteous side. To do this, the option is to apply Beda, which is about creating differences. In such a way, the unrighteous side is weakening. This may involve, for example, reducing the capability of the unjust enemy, divert those who support the unjust cause, etc. If all that fails, then there is a duty to fight, danda, take weapons, to defeat the unrighteous and establish justice. Sama, Dana, Beda, Danda. So before the war at Kurukshetra, Pandava, with the guidance of Lord Krishna, have attempted all avenues to avoid the war according to the prescribed dharma, but all in vain. So Arjuna's war was just, but he was not fighting. Was Arjun fully convinced of his decision? No. If so, why could not he command Krishna, the charioteer, to drive away from the battlefield? After all, Arjuna had instructed once, take my chariot to the middle, had he not? But he was deluded. He realized he was not in a position to use his buddhi and therefore needed help. So he fell at Krishna's feet. Total surrender was evident. When we know what we, when we need help, we must seek. This is the foremost qualification that we must develop. We usually don't ask for help because mostly our pride is bigger than our brain. Vain ego makes us feel as if we are stooping low by asking for help. It is completely wrong. Do ask and take help as and when required in life, without inhibition, without pride. This is a key lesson. What nobility does Arjuna reflect? It's an important point. Arjuna's reluctance to fight was not out of fear of his life. He's a warrior. He says that he is happily willing to die at the hands of the others. But his misplaced worries are on those who may be killed by his arrows. He is willing to sacrifice all his possession, including his life, to avoid the war. This is a noble character, which we must learn. Ready to sacrifice for the goodness to prevail. It's a great virtue. Sacrifice and surrender have made Arjuna a fitting recipient of God's gospel. Why did Krishna choose Arjuna to impart Bhagavad Gita? There were many stalwarts, yogis in the story. Yet Arjuna received the words directly from God. But it is not Krishna who chose Arjuna. It is Arjuna who chose Krishna. If you know the story, first as a friend, when he had a choice between Krishna and his mighty army, Arjuna chose Krishna. Then at the war, he gave himself completely to Krishna and chose him as his teacher. With his absolute surrender at the divine feet, devoid of all ego, he fell silently. After emptying his deluded mind through words of grief, perhaps confused, perhaps grieved, but surely as pure as the gold. So we need to become like Arjuna, focused on our goal, steadfast devotion on our means, ready to sacrifice for others, devoid of ego, with reverence to all, full of love, and total surrender to the divine.